You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Having a bad week? Well, hang in there, because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast on the Post Show Recaps Network. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by my esteemed friend and partner on this journey, Jacob Redman. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I just found out that we're officially at the friend stage. That's exciting.
I refer to you as friend on almost every intro, and I've also used esteemed last week as well, so I kind of got lazy with my introduction this week, but I'll come up with something creative for next week.
Hey, I'll take it. Compliments abounding. I think it's great. Zach, I'm doing amazing. Unlike the Avatar friends that we have in this episode, it's not winter here in Chicago. It's actually beautiful weather. Today I went on a bike ride next to the lake. I sat outside. I had lunch. It was great. So yeah, I'm really, really feeling great about this. I'm really scared because I know it's about to get cold soon, but yeah, I'm really just trying to enjoy all of the nice sunshine before things get cold and chilly. What about you, Zach?
Man, Chicago's known as the Windy City, and I live in one of the warmer places in Canada, in Vancouver, and yet our weather has been quite terrible. First, we had the forest fires, and then we had all the smoke up here, so our air quality was like was some of the worst in the whole world for a while. And then, so I couldn't even go outside at that time. And then we had like torrential downpour last week. It was like the worst rain ever. I mean, it was good. Like, honestly, it's good because of the fire, so it's not the biggest deal. But I remember I walked into the grocery store, came out, and it was not raining. I came out and it was just piss and rain. So yeah, was not great, but I don't know if the listeners want to hear too much about the weather in our respective cities. But maybe, who knows, maybe this is riveting podcasting. So
hey, I think a nice day in Chicago, nice end of summer, that's great podcasting. I don't know what you're talking about. I think I biked like 15 miles today. So
15 all of miles. This, oh wow, you're like professional cyclist or something. That's a lot of cardio. I feel like,
well, I did have an electric bike, so it makes those go a lot faster. Yeah, I was not actually pedaling that hard. Maybe we can actually just cut this part out so I sound like super super badass. Yeah, I went 15 miles.
15 miles sounded like a lot to me. Even on an electric bike, I'd probably still get tired. I'm not exactly the best athlete, but yeah, no, that's cool. I might go play basketball later. It is sunnier today. It's the first nice day in a long time, so at least we both have nice weather in our respective cities. So back to Avatar. Last week's episode was great. I thought Imprisoned, I gave it a 4. I thought it was the best episode we'd watched up to that point. This episode, not to spoil it, not as good as last week, but I think we'll still have a lot of fun with this podcast. What say you, Jacob?
Yeah, I agree. The people on Team Avatar Podcasting can expect, a rollicking good time. But I agree with the episode. It feels like we're kind of setting up the spirit world. The first episode of the entire series is kind of setting up the bending and all that, and I felt like it kind of suffered a bit. I feel like this episode does the same sort of thing, suffering a bit more than other episodes because it is setting up a lot of the spirit world and these mechanics. But overall, I think it was good.
It had its good parts, so we'll get into it. And the introduction of the spirit world is really interesting and is a big part of the series as a whole. So I think there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. Before we get too far in, mm-hmm. I want to just shout out that we have our own feed on Apple Podcasts. Pretty exciting. You can subscribe to Aang in There, an Avatar The Last Airbender post-show recap on our very own feed, and you can just smash that 5 stars. If you don't think you're 5 stars, or we're 5 stars, you know, don't say anything. But if you think we're 5 stars, smash that and write a review.
Yeah, smash that 5 stars. And yeah, it's funny because I was just about to get into this as well. Also, an easier link for all of that is postshowrecaps.com/ATLA. So that's the easiest way to get to our feed. And yeah, we appreciate all the listeners we have. We were looking at the statistics. I didn't even realize we had as many listeners as we do. So thanks to everybody who tunes in and enjoys listening to me and Jacob just have fun talking Avatar.
Yeah, I saw that we were already at 13 ratings, and it really lifted my spirit. So, it really does mean a lot. Thank you all for coming on this journey. You know, maybe we're going to go into the spirit world. Maybe we'll stay here. But no matter what, it's good to know people will join on with us.
Yeah, I have a friend. He used to be a pro weightlifter. And one of his things he would do, he'd eat 12 eggs and drink 4 liters of milk a day. And then he left a review under the pseudonym Eggs, Eggs, Milk, Milk. So I knew it was my good friend there leaving that review under that. And it's funny because he left kind of I wouldn't have known it was him if it wasn't for his username. So that was kind of funny.
Wow. I was actually going to ask you about that. Like if Milk, Milk, Eggs was a nice little version of Duck, Duck, Goose. That's what I thought that it was.
No, yeah, but that's why he did that. Shout out to my buddy.
12 eggs a day?
Yeah, I would not recommend it. I would not do it. But he is a very strong individual, so I guess his diet worked out for him. I cannot do that. I'm not the biggest egg guy myself, so.
Yeah, me either. Okay, well, there you go. So far, we've heard about eggs and in Chicago weather, so I'd say we're killing it.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into the podcast, I have one more dumb fact, I guess. I got into this last week. I was talking about the UFC fighter who said he was going to make it look easy like Toph did when she was introduced in her as the blind bandit in the tournament. And that UFC fighter, Israel Adesanya, won by second round technical knockout. And, spoiler alert, he did make it look very easy. In fact, it wasn't even close. He was the much smaller individual. He's a lot leaner than his muscular opponent. And he still knocked him out in relatively easy fashion. And his nickname is The Last Stylebender, and he's the hugest Avatar fan I know, as that's a celebrity. So I feel like that was kind of cool.
Yeah, there you go. I'm telling you, next time he has to fight with a blindfold, if he's trying to, you know, size up to Toph, he has to go without a sight. If he can do it this well with sight, imagine how well he'd be if he mastered the, you know, the seeing through the ground like Toph can.
Yeah, and like we were talking about last week, now that he's out of fight camp, our people will be in touch with his people.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll get him on the podcast.
Oh, I can't wait. You know, we can do the bending, the breakdown of like the different bending types with a few UFC fighters. He can give us the inside scoop. This sounds great, Zach. Let's set it up.
I think if like, I don't know, if there was ever like, if we ever got somehow very big and we were the premier Avatar, The Last Airbender podcast, I feel like there's a more than 0% chance we could get Israel Adesanya on, but I could be wrong.
Okay, well, I guess we should start getting to the Avatar content then, so we can, you know, blow up, get this this last stylebender on here.
True. So we'll jump into the recap. So the episode opens, they're flying on Appa, and Katara's wondering how it would feel if she could jump just down on a cloud. It looks so fluffy and nice. We get this serene view of them flying, and then Aang just goes and jumps off into a cloud. He just does it, and that's how the episode opens.
Yep. He just decides, like, oh, yeah, I also think that. And because he's an airbender and can fly back up, he's just like, cool, let's do it. Do you ever look at clouds and think, like, what would it be like to fall through them?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like every person, especially when you're a kid, everyone, single person's like kind of thought this thought. But Aang actually does it, and he gets the reality. It's like, oh, it's mostly just water. He comes back, he's just a little wet.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the first episode, we looked at icebergs how 90% is underwater. Now we're getting that clouds are made of water. There's some great science stuff. Like, science teachers should show this show, like, you know, on test days or whatever, so that the kids can learn a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if a lot of the stuff in Avatar is scientifically accurate, but this cloud stuff definitely was. Aang comes back and he just wet, and that's how they open. But then right after we see this scene, We see them flying over and we see this black, this forest almost that's been burnt down. I think one of Team Avatar describes it as a scar on the earth. That's what it looks like from above.
Yeah, the land's like completely ravaged and all that's left is a few burnt tree stumps, essentially. It's like all black and ash other than that. And yeah, the land's completely ravaged by the Fire Nation, and Aang's like super sad about it.
He's depressed. He kind of takes ownership for this. He feels like he let this happen, and it's his fault that the Fire Nation has done this. Sokka and Katara kind of reassure him that it's not his fault, and yeah.
It's also interesting that Sokka gets mad about it. So Aang, you know, drops to his knees and he's really upset. Sokka's like screaming and Katara says like, be quiet, which honestly, like, why does he need to be quiet? Like, you know, he can yell, go off, pop off. But yeah, I think like Sokka gets really angry about it. And it's interesting to see the breakdown, you know. Sokka's getting angry, probably because he's seen this happen to parts of his own tribe. And Aang's sad because he feels the responsibility of being the Avatar.
The thing with Sokka as a character, and especially as the series goes on, he really develops and evolves and comes into his own. But obviously, he's the comic relief. But he kind of, out of Team Avatar, he harbors the most resentment and almost rage towards the Fire Nation. Especially in later episodes, we'll see. Sokka really does not like the Fire Nation and what they're doing. And that's why he's always skeptical of any new person they interact with. He's always assuming they're Fire Nation, or they might be ending up ruining their goal of taking down the Fire Nation. And Sokka is really passionate in his pursuit for, like, to take down the Fire Nation. So,
yeah. And then we see Aang just feel like he can't really do anything about this. Then I think we cut to Iroh, right?
It's a cut. Do they mention, they don't talk about Monkey Otso and stuff in this scene. Did they mention that briefly?
I think it's the next one. Maybe.
It's no. Yeah. You might be right. So yeah, we have a weird transition to Iroh in a hot tub. And yeah, he's just chilling here, and Zuko wants to leave. Zuko's like, we gotta go. We gotta find the Avatar. We're on his tail. At the end of the last episode, Zuko had Katara's necklace. So he's adamant. He's just ready to go and wants to find the Avatar. But Iroh's just chilling in the hot tub.
Yeah, he's just chilling, not really doing much. And this spring, this hot spring that they have, is the perfect setup because it's like a bunch of individual springs. So everyone could get their own little area. I think that's like pretty sick. I wonder, do you think that this is like a natural formation, or do you think some earthbenders came and like made it look like this? Because it looks very manufactured.
I didn't think of that, but yeah, it probably earthbenders could easily make something like this. If you're an earthbender entrepreneur and you're trying to come up with a new business, and yeah, some earthbent hot spring seems like a smart business idea. So, and yeah. The thing with Iroh is that I never realized this, but firebenders, they can they can always warm up tea. And in this case, Iroh's just able to make his hot tub the perfect temperature.
Yes. This is a very useful application of firebending. And I think that Iroh might be one of the few people who would actually use their firebending in this way. I feel like most regular firebenders, maybe like they couldn't heat it up as easily, but yeah, Uncle Iroh is clever enough to be like, yeah, the water's a little cold. Let's heat this bad boy up. Yeah, so makes sense to me.
So then Iroh's like, okay, we gotta go. He's like, fine, let's go. He gets up and he's just naked. And then they use Zuko turns away and they use Zuko's forearm to cover Iroh's junk. And upon seeing the horrific sight of Iroh naked, Zuko decides to give him an extra 30 minutes.
Which is very kind. You know, I feel like Zuko, obviously he's disgusted and he tries to avert his gaze, but yeah, he gives him a lot more time. I would have said get ready, your clothes are right here, and I would have tossed his clothes to him. But yeah, Zuko's kind and gives him a whole half hour. That's pretty long bath.
Yeah, so there's a transition. We cut back to Katara, Aang, and Sokka. Aang is still kind of moping around. He's very sad at what's happened to this village that's been burned to the ground. And Katara decides to cheer him up by hitting him in the head with the acorn. And then she hits Sokka in the head too. Sokka's laughing until he gets hit in the head with the acorn, which I thought was kind of funny. Funny scene they had there.
This feels like a move that Sokka would do. You know, the acorn and throw it at him. I feel like that's good. I think it's funny, you know, Sokka's like, it cheers me up, and then gets hit in the head and is immediately upset. How bad do you think an acorn thrown could hurt?
It can hurt a lot, especially if it was thrown hard. But I think so. Like, if it's someone like, you had a baseball player pitching an acorn at your head.
Okay. Yeah.
Of course. But I doubt Katara's throwing it too hard, so I doubt it actually caused any of these guys pain.
When I was in elementary school, after class would let out, we would all run across the street to where this big yard was, and it was on a hill, a huge yard with a bunch of oak trees. So there were a bunch of acorns. And in the fall, we would have these acorn fights where we would just start throwing them at each other. And they got so bad that the principal and like a teacher had to go walk there to make sure, because we had like 20 people deep just hurling acorns at each other.
Damn, you guys are just having acorn wars as kids.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I gotta say, even if you throw them hard, they don't hurt that much unless they hit you in the face. Yeah. I think like ultimately an acorn, It's not really hurting you that bad, especially when it's thrown by like a third grader.
Yeah, makes sense. Honestly, I never really see acorns here. There's not too many acorn trees in my area. There is a lot of trees, but I don't really see acorns anywhere, honestly.
Well, if you join me in Texas sometime when I go back home, we can have an acorn fight, Zach.
Sure, we'll have Avatar Last Airbender live hanging there, and we'll do it in Texas. Yep. Packed up.
I thought of a great strategy. Instead of collecting the acorns after school, I would put acorns in my bag before school, so I already had a bunch of ammo. So, hot tip. Everyone can use that strategy. Come prepared.
Yeah, you guys are really into this. Like, I'm kind of interested. So, how long did this go on for? Like a month, a year?
I think that this was like all fall. So, it was like, so at first it was just me and like, you know, two or three of my closest friends. But then a bunch of other people saw and they wanted to join. And I think we had like 9 to 10 weeks of this. And then it finally devolved when one of my friends didn't have acorns. So he resorted to kicking and he had steel-toed boots.
Oh, and my geez.
Pretty quickly, the parents were like, no, no more. This is not going to happen. And that's when the teachers came out and shut that one down.
We'll move on. That's kind of a big jump from acorns to kicking and steel-toed boots. Also, what kind of third grader has steel-toed boots? Is he just working in the fields? Like,
I think it might have been like the only pair of shoes that he would wear. I think he's actually going to listen to this podcast, and maybe I shouldn't say too much, but like he definitely had other pairs of shoes, but no matter what the weather, like even in the summer, he'd be wearing these steel-toed boots. And the threat of kicking was real. He would definitely kick you right in the shins. And acorns do not compare to a kick in the shins.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't think we talked too much about acorns versus steel toe boots, but here we are.
Yeah. So when we get to our acorn fight for our live show, no steel toe boots. If you're wearing them, you're out.
Okay. Got it.
Perfect. All right. We can get back.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So we'll move on. We see this old man. He comes up to Aang and Team Avatar, and he realizes, Aang is the Avatar. Hey, this older gentleman, he kind of looks like a Legend of Zelda NPC almost.
I had that exact thing in my notes. Did you? What? That's so random. Yeah, I wrote this is
think alike. Yeah,
I wrote this is a classic Legend of Zelda NPC. And then when we get to the village, I said this entire village is just NPCs because these people are so boring.
Yeah, they're so, and even like I don't know what coloring they use for this episode, but a lot of times like in the first scene of this when they're doing the cloud stuff and Aang flies in the cloud, it's almost like bright and nice and stuff. But when we get to this village, and we're skipping ahead a little bit, but it's everything so gray and dreary. Nobody has personalities like Haru and even Tyro last episode. Like, they're all just kind of drab and dreary and kind of, they're all like depressing. And they almost, if they had elven ears, then you would just assume they're Legend of Zelda NPCs. Quite frankly, because they all kind of look like they're straight out of just Ocarina of Time.
I agree. These people are only in the plot so they can say, oh, hey, by the way, our village is sad. And they're not interesting. I don't even think we have their names. I think it's old man.
Yeah. So speaking of old man, he has a funny line here that I don't want to skip over. So he takes Aang back to the village and he's like, it's the greatest honor of a lifetime to be in your presence. Now, the thing is, I know. I realize Avatar is the most powerful person, but I never really thought about it. I guess the Avatar to these people is like their Jesus Christ in a way. Like, he's the most, I guess, for lack of a better term, godly individual that they'll ever come across. But still, they've seen so many powerful benders, and yet for the Avatar, greatest honor of a lifetime just to be in your presence. Like, that, I don't know. That's kind of insane to me. I feel like that's a, like, would that be, well, would I want that to be the greatest honor of my lifetime? I don't know.
You know, I'm trying to think of people that I would want to meet, like celebrities and stuff. There are some people that are like pretty high up there, you know, like maybe like actors or actresses I really like. But if there was a little like Avatar, I would love to meet them. I think that would be one of the greatest honors because, you know, they're super powerful. When you meet one Avatar, you really are meeting all of them since they are reincarnated. So maybe you have like a favorite and they're like excited to meet like Kiyoshi, essentially. So, yeah, I think it would actually be, I think it'd be the best part of my life if I met the Avatar.
That's fair. And I guess there's no airbenders or anything like that. So even Aang in that instance is very unique. But I just feel like in a world where bending's ubiquitous, it's almost like, I don't know. I feel like if Aang existed in our world and there was only one person who had every bending type, then yeah, of course, it would be the greatest honor of a lifetime. But I feel like in their world, I don't know. Like, if I was just one of these Legend of Zelda NPCs, I don't know if it would be the greatest honor.
Well, look, if you're one of these NPCs, then you're going to be saying some, you know, boring dialogue just to move the plot along. I feel like this is exactly what you'd hear in, like, Skyrim, being like, it is the greatest honor to meet you. And that's just, like, the line they say, like, 20 times as you keep running by trying to steal stuff from them.
Honestly, you are kind of convincing me, because especially when you look at these villagers and their depressed-ass lives, maybe it probably is the greatest honor of their lifetime to be in the presence of the Avatar. So you're right. So yeah. We'll move on. So basically, this village is being attacked by Heibai, a black and white spirit that he attacks their village at night. And the winter solstice is coming close. And on the day of the solstice, the spirit world and the human world are basically one and the same. And so this is the first instance we're hearing of the spirit world. The spirit world is basically, how would you describe the spirit world, Jacob? It's like a place where only spirits and I guess the Avatar can travel freely in between our world and the spirit world. And it's a place where spirits just exist.
Yeah, so I would say, like, in part, there's, like, a part of the plane in the spirit world that interacts with, like, the world that, you know, the rest of the people inhabit, like, the physical world. And so, like, sometimes these spirits will come in, but most of the time there's, like, you know, a totally different landscape, totally different world where these spirits are. Yeah, and I think that it's, like, you know, you can sort of impact the real world, but you're not necessarily there. As we'll see later, like, Aang is going up to other people, like, trying to get their attention. They don't see him. He also can't bend. But yeah, in some ways, like, they are on the real world, but it's kind of like not holograms. What would be the word? Like, ghosts, maybe?
Yeah. They kind of are just like ghost spirits. And the thing with Heibai, he's one of the few spirits that actually can cause damage to the real world. He's been destroying their village and attacking buildings. And one of these men calls the Avatar the great bridge between man and spirits, because I guess the Avatar is the only person who can travel freely between our world and the spirit, or their world and the spirit world.
Yeah, I think, you know, other people can get abducted to the spirit world, but yeah, very few people can, you know, willingly come and go as they please. One interesting note here is that Heibai are the two words that make it up, Hei and Bai, are the Chinese words for black and white, which is like an apt name for the spirit, but it's kind of boring when you know this. Like, how scary would a monster be if it was called, like, blue-green?
True, but I guess to us dumb Westerners that don't speak Chinese, it's kind of interesting to us. It's like, hey, bye. It's like, ooh, that kind of sounds like a mysterious spirit. But then when you learn the actual definition, it's like, yeah, that is a very boring name.
Yeah, like these people saw the monster. They're like, oh, that thing is black and white. Let's name it Black White. Like, it's not really doing much for me. It sounded like really cool. So I looked up and saw if I could, like, you know, find out what the name meant. And yeah, I found out that it literally translates to black white. So there you go. I think, yeah, if you had something in English like this, like if a monster was attacking a village and it was called like purple yellow, I would not be scared.
Yeah, it's like basically the equivalent of this is when a lot of, I guess, hipsters, for lack of a better term, they'll get tattoos with Asian characters, either Chinese characters or Japanese characters, and they won't know the definition. So I know sometimes it'll just be a very basic term that they'll have tattooed on themselves as if it's like very meaningful and interesting. So I think that's kind of the equivalent of that. So then Aang, he basically, he says here, he doesn't know anything about the spirit world and he's never even traveled, because like Aang is still coming into his own. If Aang was even 18 or older and then he went like into his 100-year slumber, I think he would be a lot more powerful and he'd know a lot more about the spirit world. But because Aang is so young and never actually learned any of this, he's an avatar, but he knows nothing about the spirit world.
Yeah, and I think like it's kind of interesting, we find out that, you know, avatars are usually told when they're 16 that they're the avatar. But Aang is 12, so he had a few years before I think he was going to get like the avatar training, right? Like before he was just a regular air nomad for all intents and purposes. So I think it's, yeah, he's like kind of behind the eight ball where he's not really super well versed in the spirit world connection. He knows like he's supposed to get guidance, but he doesn't really know from who, or I guess how he's going to contact Roku. Yeah, I think it's like pretty interesting, but despite not knowing at all what is happening, Aang's like, yeah, I'll help out, which is pretty brave for a 12-year-old kid who doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. And that's what we talk about, Team Avatar. That's the one quality all of them share. They're all extremely brave. They're willing to put their lives on the line to protect people. And that's why they're the heroes of this story. So Aang, what's funny is that he says he doesn't know anything about the spirit world, and Sokka, but he'll try and to fight the spirit. And Sokka's just like, yeah, we're all going to get eaten by the spirit monster. Sokka, ever the pessimist here.
Yeah, it's not very optimistic. You know, he's just like, oh, well, you're definitely going to lose. which to be fair, he did initially lose. So Sokka is like spot on, at least in the beginning.
So we cut back to Iroh. He's napping in his hot tub. He must have forgotten about Zuko and going on. He even says, he's like, oh, Zuko might have left without me because I've been sleeping for a while. And it's actually a little metal vole comes along and wakes up Iroh. And then,
okay, wait. Oh, continue. How did you know what the name of that was?
I think Iroh mentioned that it's a metal vole. That's what he said.
I literally like paused it. I rewound it. Like I could not find out what he was saying. I knew that he was saying meadow, but I thought it was like a meadow bowl.
No, like, you know, like a bowl, like the little rodent. Oh, that's what he said. Yeah.
That makes so much more sense.
Yeah, because a vole is not an animal I see common. Like, it's not an animal I know too much about. So then when he said it, I just took a note of that.
All right. Well, yeah. So in my notes, I have small rat, which I think is apt. But yeah, he hears this little rat and he's like, oh, okay, it's fine. But then we see the rat is like jumping up, essentially trying to warn him. And I like how the rat is on the side, or sorry, meadow vole. The meadow vole is on the side of Uncle Iroh. He's like trying to warn him, like, dude, like, you're about to get got. So you better, you know, get to step in, get out of here.
Some vole enthusiast is going to angrily email us saying that they're not rats.
I know. I'm so sorry. If
I doubt it. I'm just making a joke.
If you are a meadow vole enthusiast, you have my deepest condolences. I'm so sorry. I would also love to meet you if you love voles so much. So please do reach out.
Yeah, so the vole does warn Iroh, but it's kind of futile because Iroh's immediately captured by these Earth Nation soldiers who recognize him as the Dragon of the West. And what's cool is that Iroh's chilling in this earth, like this man-made hot tub, essentially, in the earth. And then the earthbenders kind of bend where he's sitting in and like use that earth to capture him, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that is cool. As soon as you're in any type of like earth formation, you're kind of screwed because they're able to come up and put all these like triangles around him. So he essentially like cannot get out. Pretty good move by them.
Yeah, it's smart. They did a good job.
It's followed by like a pretty bad
fight back here.
Yeah. He's like, no chance I'm getting that one.
Yeah, so we move on. Iroh just captured. More on that later. Aang decides to head out and confront Heibei. But Sokka, he says, oh, they should go. Like, Katara and him should provide backup for Aang. But Aang doesn't think so, and Aang decides to go it alone.
Yeah. And, you know, Aang walks out there, and he makes an official Avatar proclamation where he essentially says, leave people alone. And I like how he walks back. He's like, cool, I did it. Like, he's like, this worked.
Yeah, he does. Continue. Yeah.
I had no confidence that this was going to work. So I wonder why Aang is like, oh, yeah, all I need to say is don't do it, and it'll work out.
Yeah, he does this little performative act where he spins his staff and then points it at Haybar and is basically like, evil spirit, be gone. And yeah, this, I also had no confidence that this was going to work. But then Haybar, yeah. we do see Haybar, it actually kind of slinks out the village for a brief second and then it instantly comes back. And now this is our first glimpse of Haybar. And you can describe, give your own description of Haybar. When I saw him, I was like, kind of look like an evil alien version of almost like Venom. In a way from Spider-Man. He kind of has the black and white motif, the round head, the gross mouth. And he is this weird, he's like, I guess he has six arms or like four legs and then a pair of arms. Like, I don't know. How would you describe this, Jacob?
Yeah, like I kind of thought it was like the Pokemon Machamp where it's like, you know, it can like stand up if it wants to and like have all these like buff arms. But I guess, yeah, it does kind of have four legs. I was thinking it was two legs with four arms, but... Yeah, I think
I'm just thinking when the scene when it captures Sokka, and I'm skipping a little bit ahead here, but it captures Sokka and it's kind of like sprinting away. It's almost sprinting on four legs. I could be wrong, but
yeah, no, I think that's right. But yeah, so it's like this like big buff looking thing, and later we find out that it's like the spirit of a panda. And I think when you know that, it makes a lot more sense because it's like, you know, a panda's like, you can kind of see how like the panda body's inside of this like beefed up panda. This looks like a panda on steroids.
I don't know about that though. It doesn't look, it almost looks more alien like to me than a panda. It's kind of weird. Like once you see it's a panda, you're like, okay, you can see how it became a panda, but it doesn't, it almost looks just more, way more grotesque. I feel like a panda on steroids would just be like a buff bear. And I wouldn't like, this is not really how I would describe Haybar personally.
That's fair. That's fair. I will say Haybar is pretty powerful. You know, Aang is like walking away. Well, at first Aang says, my name is, and then it does like a huge rah, and it's like, yeah, I thought that was funny.
Haybar is also very intimidating. Like, he's the scariest thing we've seen. I guess it's between him and the Unagi at this point. But honestly, because Haybar is spiritual, it's like almost that provides another element of danger. And I don't know. I feel like Haybar might be the scariest monster we've seen up to this point.
Yeah, I think this one is scarier only because, like, you know, in the Unagi, like, all you have to do is get out of the water and you're, like, pretty much fine. I don't think the Unagi's, like, going to attack you in your home, but Haybar will attack your house indiscriminately. Like, as soon as Haybar's, like, running around, just destroying buildings at random, shape-shifting even, like, jumping from one side of the street to another and, like, just destroying things. Zach, I had a question for you here. Earlier, we hear that the village, the people say, like, you know, this monster's abducting one person a night. So why is everyone hiding? Because, like, it seems like as soon as Haybar captures someone that they leave. So, like, why don't they just do a lottery where one person's going to get abducted and they sit at the front gate so nothing gets destructed?
I mean, they could do that, but I think what they're trying to do before the Avatar came, if I had to guess, they're probably just all brainstorming a way to stop Haybar, and rather than sacrificing a villager, they're all just coming together and just brainstorming a way to stop it before anybody else gets taken away. Because I think they, I don't know if they have that many people in their village, only how many people can they even sacrifice per day before their numbers are completely dwindled.
See, my thought is here, like, you know, we find out the solstice is the next day, so maybe they're going to take, like, two, maybe three people. Like, I don't know how big this village is, but kind of, like, cut your losses, send two of them out. Have you ever read this short story called The Lottery?
Yes, I have. I have. Yeah, when I was in the 12th grade, I directed a play of The Lottery, actually, a little short play. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I think, you know, do exactly that. Everyone draws a rock. Whoever gets, what is it, the black rock or the white rock? Which one's bad?
I'm not sure. Do they even draw? All right. Do they draw rocks or tickets?
I thought they drew rocks.
They drew rocks, then, and then they used then everyone else rocks later.
Yeah. I thought that. Oh wait.
Oh, well. Not to spoil the story of the short story, The Lottery. Here, it's a very, it's a good little short story. If you haven't read it, surprise.
I feel like we can spoil the short story, but anyway, whoever loses the lottery should just go out, sit by the front gate, get abducted, cut your losses. Most of the town's saved.
Yeah. No, you might be right. You might be right, honestly. So Aang gets slapped by Haybar instantly, and then Sokka decides to help. He basically throws his boomerang at Haybar's, like, ass. I don't know how else to describe this.
Yep.
And then he does that, and then Haybar, right after, just turns to him and just grabs him. It was, like, it's such a short, it's, like, in a very quick, of like, small amount of time, all of this happened, and Sokka is captured.
Yeah, I think it is funny here how, you know, Sokka is very brave. This is like another instance where Sokka takes a risk, is probably going to lose. And here, Heihei doesn't even seem to take it out on him. He's like, okay, cool, you work, and takes him away. This is why I had my idea of just someone volunteering, because as soon as the Heihei gets Sokka, it's like, cool, that's all for tonight, folks.
Yeah, the villagers must have felt so vindicated because they kept telling Sokka, or especially the one old man, he was like, no, you can't confront Heihei, leave it to the Avatar. And then as soon as Sokka does, he just gets captured. So I bet that one villager is like, I told that dumb idiot not to do that, and look at him, he got captured. I straight up told him, blah, blah, blah.
You think that they're going to gloat? That's part of the NPC dialogue?
I would have gloated. I think the NPC, you know what? Maybe the NPC, they'll show a little bit of emotion and start gloating. Why not?
Hey, I would love to see any amount of emotion out of these people. These were bumps on a log.
Yeah, they were so bored, especially compared to last episode. And I think that's part of the thing. Whenever you have these stories that are mostly contained to one episode, you at least want the characters in these stories to be interesting. And I think a good example of that, what made last week's episode great, was George Takei's Warden. He's not even on screen for that long. He's only in the second half of the episode, but he's just such a good character for a little one-off episode. And we don't get any good characters like that here. They're all the most boring, sad, depressed people. They don't even have names. So, yeah, I think that's one of the issues with this episode. I don't even think the actual story itself is fine, but there's not really any interesting characters outside the Team Avatar and Iroh and Zuko.
Well, maybe we can jump to another scene where we get a bunch of other people without names, where we see the Fire Nation, a bunch of soldiers and Zuko, of course, walk up, and the dumb soldiers are like, oh, it was a landslide.
The soldiers are still dumb even from last week. Zuko's only, 16 when he's the prince? Is he even younger? Mm-hmm. He's extremely young, and yet he just has way more common sense than these soldiers.
Yeah.
And then they assume it's a landslide. That doesn't even make sense.
Maybe if I lived in a world without bending, I would be like, well, that's weird. Maybe it's a landslide. But, like, they understand that earthbending exists, right? Like, these are firebenders.
Yes.
And they're still like, oh, I think the rocks went uphill. Like, come on now. Just dumb.
I think that's a running thing in Avatar, is that the NPC Fire Nation soldiers are just kind of dumb. And I think they have more gags going forward, so.
Yeah. Who do you think's more dumb, a stormtrooper or one of these Fire Nation soldiers?
Ooh, see, they're so similar. I don't know who's, I can't remember the stupidest thing I've seen a stormtrooper do besides just, like, die in comical fashion or get shot or lightsabered in comical fashion. So, yeah, I'll go with Fire Nation soldiers here.
Yeah, there's that one stormtrooper that hits his head on the Death Star wall. I feel like that's pretty dumb. Obviously, that was a gag, or, like, that was not on purpose, but that one's pretty stupid. After Zuko finally gets that Uncle Iroh was captured by the earthbenders, we see Aang chasing the Heihei that has Sokka. And we see Aang really getting pretty close, so close that he's like about to touch hands with Sokka. And as soon as he does, just disappears. We find out that Heihei escapes to the spirit world, but that's going to be pretty scary for Aang.
Yeah, and it's gotta be scary kind of for Sokka too as well. Sokka's just, this is still early on in their adventure. He's just left the Water Tribe, which is the only place he's known. And now he's getting abducted by this spirit monster into an unknown spirit world between like his world and the spirit world. I don't know. If I was Sokka, I'd be terrified here, quite honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I would be, pretty scared. And then I think we see Aang crash, and when he wakes up, he can't find Sokka anywhere. And we'll find out in a second that he has entered the spirit world, which is pretty interesting. We hop back to Uncle Iroh, who's on the back of what looks like an ostrich, but they're using it like a horse. Is that accurate, Zach?
Yeah. I should have taken, it was an ostrich mixed with another animal, I'm almost certain, but I don't know exactly what the other animal was. Maybe it was like half horse, half ostrich, but I don't remember any horse features. But yeah, you're right, they got like three of these ostrich-esque animals, and Iroh does something pretty intelligent here. He pretends to fall asleep and fall off the ostrich, and then he leaves his sandal on the floor when they pick him back up and put him back on the ostrich. And he knows that Zuko will be able to track him with his sandal.
Yeah, and as we hear about this, you know, the Earthbender captain is telling them, Uncle Iroh asks, where are you taking me? The Earthbending captain says, you're going to Ba Sing Se. This is the first time we hear about Ba Sing Se, which turns out to be the Earth Kingdom capital. But then we hear that Uncle Iroh laid siege for 600 days to Ba Sing Se. Zach, is there anything that you could do for 600 days without getting tired?
No, absolutely yeah, no. Not. And not the thing with, yeah, this is the first time we hear any, because we've heard Iroh referred to as the Dragon of the West before, but he is the Fire Lord's older brother, and he's a very powerful firebender. And before he was this peaceful, tea-loving old man, he was a general in the war, and like you just said, he laid siege to the Earth Kingdom capital of Ba Sing Se for 600 days, which is, yeah, that's insane. And
yeah. I totally get why his men got tired of it. Like he says, you know, like, oh, my soldiers, you know, they were too tired to go on. And I think it's funny here. He says, I'm still tired. And then that's when he dozes off and drops his little sandal there. Smart move from Uncle Iroh. One question I had is, why doesn't he just escape, though? Like, it seems like he could probably get out of this. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think he could, but I don't know. Maybe he just thinks it'll be easier to escape with Zuko. Like, once Zuko finds him, him and Zuko versus these guys might make it a way easier fight, which it ends up being. So, I don't know, because you're right. Iroh is powerful enough where I think he could escape these Earth Nation soldiers.
Yeah. I was, like, a little confused, you know, like, he drops his sandal, which, like, ends up being a good move, but I kind of think if these people are silly enough to let him drop off the back of the ostrich horse, that he probably can take him. Like, maybe the captain's a bit stronger, but I really do think that he could have gotten him here, but I guess, you know, why make the episode shorter? Gotta have some B story in here.
Yeah, so then we see Katara. She's with the old man NPC from earlier. Mm-hmm. She's worried about Sokka and Aang. And Aang comes, and it's like how you described earlier. What's cool is that to denote that he's in the spirit world, he's kind of a shade of blue. So I thought that was pretty interesting. You see basically blue Aang. Look, we have a blue avatar, just like James Cameron's avatar. The one similarity they have.
Yeah, I actually had not made the connection that both Avatar The Last Airbender and the movie have blue people.
For now they do. Yeah, now
there
this,
you go.
This Avatar Perfect. Has somebody blue.
Perfect.
And this old man kind of reassures Katara saying there's no way Aang will come back without Sokka. Yep. So, nice from the old NPC. And then it's like almost like these whiplash cuts, because we instantly cut back and we see Zuko. He finds Iroh's smelly sandal. So he basically picks it up and then he takes a whiff. He's like, ugh, yep, that's Uncle Iroh's sandal.
Yeah, so I have two questions here. The first one is, I feel like his sandal should be pretty distinctive, right? Like, it's not an Earthbender sandal. I feel like, you know, he should be able to recognize it alone, unless there are, like, tons of random people with presumably Fire Nation sandals. But second, have you ever had a flip-flop smell? It seems pretty difficult. Like, I've had shoes smell before, but a flip-flop seems hard.
Iroh must have some stanky feet, because yep. I agree with you. I had that in my notes. I don't know why his sandal smells so bad. Like, there's no way, like, especially, you must be wearing it into the ground, too, to have a sandal that smells. Because the look on Zuko's face, that looked like a man that did not enjoy what he was smelling. It didn't look like he was smelling roses when he took a whiff of Iroh's sandal. Yeah.
Not at all. You know, he smells a flip-flop and he looks pretty disgusted. I do think here we see, you know, it goes from the main plot to the subplot. And this one's just like a quick joke. He picks up the sandal, smells it. He's like, that's gross. Okay, down the path. I feel like they could have condensed this a bit and had like a bit longer segments instead of like these little shortcuts. Do you think that the shortcuts are adding anything?
No, I agree with you, but I think they just wanted this gag in there. So they just had it in there. Cause yeah, I agree. That's another issue with this episode. Last episode, we kind of just had the one story and it was focused on that. And I feel like a lot of these episodes with Iroh and Zuko, they kind of have these Whiplash-esque cuts, as you've described them before. But I think when we get to season two, when Zuko and Iroh are traveling in the Earth Kingdom, they do a better job of these cuts in particular. But yeah, season one, they're not great. So we'll continue. Aang's by himself, and he has a funny line here. He's thinking, he knows he's in the spirit world, and what he says to himself, he's like, all I have to do is figure out what I have to do. And I thought that was a funny little line he has here.
Yeah, that actually became my motto. I mean, you can't go wrong with that advice. If you do figure out what you need to do, you literally cannot go wrong. Like, there's nothing that can go badly. So yeah, I think that's words to live by.
Yeah. True. And there's not... So what happens here, Aang is just by himself, and he sees a dragon in the spirit world, and he sees it flying at him, and he tries bending, but he realizes he can't. But the dragon stops right in front of him, and the dragon actually introduces itself and puts its whisker on Aang's forehead, and it reveals that the dragon is Avatar Roku's animal guide, in the same vein that Appa is Aang's animal guide. This is the first time we see a dragon. What'd you think of this, Jacob? This was a very cool scene, I thought. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think the dragon is awesome. You know, I remember being like a little kid and thinking that dragons were the coolest things in the world. So to see like the dragon here, like all big and majestic, it's pretty badass. It's also cool that animal guides make it into the spirit world. That's a pretty sick gig. I also think, maybe I can get your opinion on this, Zach. I think dragons way better than flying bison. Like, true, way cooler.
True. I guess each, depending on what bender you are, you have a different animal guide. And yeah, I think dragons are just universally awesome. I mean, Appa would be a great companion to have as well, because he's so obedient, and he can actually, like, he's, like, smarter than a dog, I feel like, when we see this going forward, like, when we see Appa going forward, there's some of the stuff he does. Like, even last episode, Aang is able to give him directions and make him fly away and then come back. So, Appa's a great companion as well, but yeah, who can say no to having a dragon as a companion? Right. That's just too awesome, man. I'd love to have a pet dragon that's actually smart and can talk to people, put its whiskers on people's forehead, and
like, and convey a lot of information. We'll see in a bit, the dragon will do this again where it puts the whisker to Aang's head. It's a lot of information that you can get from the dragon. Like, I get that Appa can't talk, but maybe you need to find some way to communicate, because they're saying a lot with just a little bit.
Yeah, so the dragon decides to he's going to take Aang to Roku, or close to Roku. So Aang hops on the dragon and starts flying. And what's cool, he's flying overhead, and Iroh, while he's captured, is actually able to see Aang in the spirit world overhead on the dragon. Now, I didn't look this up, but I think in both Legend of Korra and Avatar The Last Airbender, Iroh is the only human that we see that's able to interact with the spirit world besides the Avatar. I could be wrong about that, but we'll see this from Iroh later, which is crazy that he's a human that's so in tune with himself and with his spirit that he's able to see what's going on in the spirit world.
Yeah, I'm trying to think right now if there's anyone else who can do this, but it definitely is not par for the course to be able to do that. And I think this speaks to how Uncle Iroh really does care, you know, all about the different types of bending. Like, obviously, he's a firebender and cares about that. But I think that the way he thinks, he's gained a lot of experience from other people throughout the world, and it's pretty respectable. So, yeah, it's cool that he's able to see the spirit world.
Yeah. And then they continue this scene. He wants his handcuffs tightened. That's what he says, which is such a weird request. And he's like, can I get my handcuffs tighter? And they're like, what? And he's like, yeah, they're so loose on my old aching bones. I want them tighter. And they're like, okay. And what he does, and this is so funny, because I think this is part of the reason why he's called the Dragon of the West. It's not just that he's a powerful airbender, but Iroh's kind of a firebender, but Iroh's also the only firebender that actually kind of firebends like a dragon. Because what he does, he breathes some hot air out of his nose to heat his handcuffs, and he ends up burning the soldier. And then he does a firebending dropkick. And I guess this is him fighting back by himself, to be fair. So he does decide to escape by himself here. He does a firebending dropkick at the other two soldiers, and then he just rolls off the cliff.
Yeah. I think it's fun how he shoots fire out of his feet. I'm not really sure that this is like a great move, the fire kick drop, or the fire drop kick, because then you're on the ground. But it looks pretty cool in this sequence, how he's able to like shoot a little fire out of his feet. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But then he,
go on. Yeah. In that same position, like he drop kicks, he's like lying on the floor and then he just rolls away.
So, yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
It was like a gag within the fight.
Yeah, it's pretty smart to roll away here to try to get some distance. But I would be scared to go down this mountain. Like, have you ever seen The Princess Bride?
Yes, I have, but it's been a while. So you can jog my memory about The Princess Bride.
There's just one scene where, the Princess Buttercup, I believe, knocks off the Dread Pirate Roberts, and he screams, "As you wish," and we see the princess throw herself off of the mountain. I felt like these are like similar amounts of courage to, you know, throw yourself off a mountain and roll down. I would be terrified to do that. I used to do it as a kid, you know, like down a small hill, but if you're picking up speed, like that's dangerous. I don't know how you stop.
Yeah, I would not be wanting to roll down any mountain. Not going to lie. I mean, I had a lot of fun rolling down hills as a child, but yeah, rolling down a mountain, I don't know, that's quite dangerous. Only somebody as powerful as a dragon of the West can even dream of doing something like that.
Yeah.
So we cut back to Aang. We get another dragon whiskered ahead to convey some more information here. The dragon's trying to communicate with Aang, and we get this very cool scene. So we have a temple, and it's changed. It's like it looks like a Fire Nation temple. It's red. It's very majestic. It's on an island, and we see the scene changing from day to night repeatedly with this temple near this volcano, and the angelic music is swelling. I thought this was one of the most magnificent kind of shots we've seen up to this point in the series. It was very impressive.
Yeah, and I think we get a lot of information here. You know, we see like a bunch of days passing and like all the different spots, and then like it'll hit on the winter solstice. And then Aang picks up on a lot of this. Maybe, you know, being an avatar makes you like good at charades or whatever you'd call this game, but I do not think I would know. Like, I would have to keep guessing and not really get the information. Were you able to piece together all of these parts, Zach?
Yeah, I was, thanks to the show, but I would be like you. I think the dragon, if I was the avatar, would be extremely frustrated by my inability to figure this out. I would just be too dumb for this poor dragon. He'd probably just shake his head and leave back to Roku saying the avatar is useless.
that'd be a much different series if the dragon just like, nope, we'll try again when the avatar becomes a waterbender. Like, we're giving up on this one, take the L.
Yeah. So what we skipped over, actually, or I skipped over, my bad, is that so the days are passing, and then there's a light that's getting closer and closer to this statue of Roku within the temple, and Aang is realizes all of this, and he's like, oh, the day the light reaches Roku will be on the solstice, and that will be when he's able to communicate with Roku, is when the light hits Roku's eyes, this Roku statue's eyes. And yeah, so that's when he realizes he'll be able to communicate with him, but it's on the solstice, and he thinks that'll be too late.
Yep. I think, you know, we're really fortunate here that Aang is able to play, I guess I'm going to keep calling it charades, as well as he can, because I'd be lost in the sauce. But yeah, you know, he gets all this information, and, you know, I think the dragon picks him back up and jet sets away again.
Yeah, then we cut back to Iroh once again. He's still rolling away after his skirmish, so this doesn't take place too far after his fight. But the Earth Nation warriors, Earth Kingdom warriors, easily catch up to him. There's not really much to glean from here, but we get this scene. They cut to Zuko, and he sees the footprints of these like ostrich, I guess, you know what they are, they're kind of like ostrich roosters in a way, almost. Like, that's kind of what they look like. They kind of, because their footprints are gonna just kind of look rooster-esque. And then he decides he can chase after Katara and Appa, because he sees them in the sky. He sees Katara flying on Appa, or he can chase after the people who took Iroh. And this is good growth from Zuko, kind of, because we see he doesn't know that the Avatar, like, so Aang is not on Appa. He just sees Appa flying. He assumes it's the Avatar, but we'll see. He actually decides to take a break from chasing the Avatar and actually go save his uncle, which is nice of Zuko.
And I think it's the right choice. You know, the chance that you actually catch the Avatar when you've come close and not been able to do it, it's pretty low. But catching Uncle Iroh is very important. You know, Uncle Iroh is like super wise. He's going to make Zuko like a better person, a better bender. So probably long term, it makes sense to go save his uncle. So yeah, it's good character development that he chooses to do that.
Yep. And then we cut back to Aang. He's flying on Roku's dragon, and they're flying full speed, like Mach 1, straight into Aang's mortal vessel. And then, like, I don't know how else to describe this. You get them, like, zooming down straight into Aang's body.
Yeah, that's a pretty good description. You know, this dragon really does like to go fast. You know, first it goes through the ceiling of the Fire Nation temple. Mm-hmm. Now it's going Mach 1 next to his body. That was a good way to describe it. But yeah, Aang returns to his body. And I think there, you know, his body's positioned on the panda spirit statue. I think he kind of like realizes then like, oh, this is why the spirit's terrorizing, you know, the village and taking a person every night, taking someone hostage.
Yeah. And Aang comes back to the village right after that. And he doesn't have Sokka. Sokka's still trapped in the spirit world. And then all these NPCs look very depressed as usual. Katara's also looking very morose. Everyone's sad. They don't have Sokka. Hey, bye, still running rampant. And yeah. Sad state of affairs in this village.
Yeah, definitely taking an L for now. You know, coming back without Sokka has got to be tough because you heard the old man NPC tell Katara, you know, he won't come back without Sokka. I'm sure he'll come back. And to not do that's got to be hard. But I do think Aang has a game plan here. So I think he's ready to go.
With the dragon, he knows a little bit more about the spirit world now. He's actually got some information. So then in the next scene, Zuko, we cut back to Zuko and Iroh. Iroh's about to get an earthbending like boulder to the face, but Zuko flies in, kicks the boulder away. And you know what he does? He breaks Iroh's handcuffs with an axe kick. Zuko doesn't even firebend. He just straight up, like, with a kick, is able to break Iroh's handcuffs. Those are some weak cuffs from the Earth Kingdom, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what Zuko is doing, but I want to be as strong as that because I don't think that he's using bending either time here to either kick a rock out of midair or to break a chain, but he's able to just smash this thing. That's pretty impressive. I do think that the Earthbender's punishment is a bit archaic. They have Uncle Iroh chained up and they're going to break his hands with a boulder. That seems terrible, because we know from his breath he can superheat stuff. We know he can bend out of his feet, drop kicking. So just by destroying his hands, it doesn't seem like that's actually going to do much. Did you think this was an effective punishment, Zach?
No, I don't think so. If you want to take him to prison, then you got to do it. Like, I don't think it was an effective punishment at all for all the reasons you just listed. Like, you break his hands, Iroh can bend. You just saw him breathe fire out of his nose. Like, he can do exactly. So much. So yeah, I don't think this is a good punishment. And Iroh and Zuko, they basically wipe the floor with these earthbenders. There's not really much to glean from this. Iroh's in his underwear this whole time. He's in like a tunic, shirtless, and he's just whipping people with his handcuffs. And then they beat the earthbenders, and Zuko's just like, Iroh, you put on some clothes. And that's pretty much the end of the Iroh and Zuko plot line this episode.
Yep.
So
yep,
continue.
To go back, I think there's a great line in here. The captain says, "Surrender yourselves. It's 5 against 2. You're clearly outnumbered." And Uncle Iroh, without skipping a beat, says, "Ah, that's true, but you are clearly outmatched," which great line. Like, that's got to be intimidating to hear from these earthbenders, because Uncle Iroh is about to go ham on these people.
True, and he does. In this fight, he doesn't even use earthbending. He kind of just, like, he has a chain almost attached to his handcuffs, and he basically just uses that almost like a lasso or like a whip and just starts whipping them with it.
Yeah, this felt very much like a waterbender move, you know, kind of using an extension of your body to whip things out of the way, like redirecting attacks. I know at one point, he's able to take a boulder that's being thrown. He's able to wrap it up with the chain and then throw it at somebody else. Very impressive, but it really seems like a waterbender move here.
Well, we'll see Iroh in like season 2 and season 3. He talks about how he's explaining to Zuko, you have to learn bending from other bending types too. You can't just look at other firebenders. So he has actually studied waterbending and tries to utilize that within his own bending, which is one of the many facets of Iroh as a character. The fact that he's one of the few fire firebenders who is willing to actually incorporate other bending types into his style.
Yeah, I think that this is like a moment here where we see that Uncle Iroh really is a talented bender. So far, he's mostly just been like a silly uncle, you know, like makes a lot of jokes, likes tea. But here we really see he understands bending. Even the captain, who looks like a pretty competent earthbender, he's able to create like a pretty big earth wall, which looks intimidating, is just taken down by Uncle Iroh. Uncle Iroh clearly wipes the floor with him.
Yeah, it's not even close.
No, not at all.
It's just a one-sided beating. So we cut back to the village. The spirit of this forest, comes back. He pops up out of nowhere. This is some Jaws stuff. It's just everybody's chilling, and Hey-Bot just pops up out, Jaws agape, and he's ready to wreak havoc. And then Aang starts battling him again. But Aang sees an acorn on the ground, one of the acorns from earlier, and he realizes... So he picks up the acorn and he puts it, I think, what does he do? Does he put it to Hei-Bai's head? Is that what he does with this acorn?
Yeah, I think what he does is he like touches the Hei-Bai's head and then he gives him the acorn. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really sweet moment. So earlier in the episode, we see, you know, Katara throw the acorn at Aang and Katara is able to pacify Aang's sadness a little bit, saying, you know, here's the acorn. It proves that the forest will rebuild and it's providing hope. And I think that's interesting because we get a flip of roles where Katara is the one bringing hope to Aang. Grand says, you know, the Avatar will bring hope to the world, but Katara brings hope to Aang. And then later in the episode, we see the same, maybe not the same acorn, but like the same symbol is given to the Hei-Bai and Aang is able to bridge that gap. It's really a sweet moment.
I didn't even put two and two together, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't even put that together at all. That's a very astute observation on your part, because it's true. The acorn is, they use it in the first part of the episode, and it comes back here. And it's a very touching moment, because what happens is Hei-Bai transforms from his hideous initial appearance to this cute little panda, and it's revealed that Hei-Bai was the spirit of this forest, and once the forest burned down, and was burnt by the Fire Nation members, Hei-Bai kind of just got corrupted and started wreaking havoc on this village. But now it's back to being peaceful.
Yep, and as the Hei-Bai, or I guess now the panda, is departing from the village, it leaves a trail of bamboo behind it where the villagers can come out of, including Sokka. And I think it's interesting that, you know, pandas eat bamboo. This guy has a lifetime supply of his food. You know, this spirit can walk, create bamboo, and then chow down. That's like an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's got to be pretty dangerous. The Hei-Bai might put on a few pounds.
True. You're right about that. Yeah, the Hei-Bai might be a chunky little spirit if it just chills in the spirit world eating as much bamboo as it wants. So what's funny is that all these villagers in Sokka come out of the spirit world, and Sokka's just like, oh, I need to use the bathroom so bad. So do they not have bathrooms in the spirit world? I don't understand that.
You know, maybe you can't bend, you can't go to the bathroom. It's not entirely clear. Maybe he was just going to hold it or something. Maybe he was too scared. But yeah, I didn't really get this. It was like a funny line that Sokka says that he needs to go pee. But yeah, it didn't make a ton of sense. I feel like you can go pee in the spirit world.
Yeah, who knows? I feel like in the spirit world, you wouldn't even need to use the washroom, so I don't know. But we continue. It's basically the end of the episode. And the villagers, these NPCs, are basically like, oh, thank you so much. If there's anything we can do to help. And Sokka's like, yeah, do you guys have some supplies, some money? Sokka really is not very polite here. He just straight up like, yeah, give us stuff so we can leave.
It makes sense because we see these people go from feast to famine. Every time they reach a village, they get, you know, all the food that the village can muster. You know, they're treated very well. But then they, you know, keep going in the wilderness. They continue on their travels and they're back to eating nuts. So it makes sense. You know, Sokka's the only one who goes and looks for food. So I guess he should be the one to ask for it so that they at least have enough stuff.
Yeah. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So Aang, he explains to Katara and Sokka, there's a temple he needs to go to communicate with Roku. It's on a crescent-shaped island, but it's in the Fire Nation. And then we get the dun-dun-dun, like the classic little, to be continued here. And yeah, what did you think of this episode overall, Jacob?
I thought this episode was pretty good. Like, you know, I enjoyed most of it. I think that it's interesting. We get two kidnappings in this episode. We get Sokka kidnapped into the spirit world, and we get Uncle Iroh kidnapped by a bunch of earthbenders, or I guess abducted's a better word, maybe not kidnapped. I think that like parallelism is nice. I thought that was like a good way to do the storytelling. The fights were not great, but I do think, you know, it sets up the spirit world pretty well. I thought it was a decent episode. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, I think it was just kind of boring compared to last week, for lack of a better term. Honestly, it was kind of slower paced. The fights were good, and they do a good job setting up the spirit world here. And I think that pays off in the next episode, once because they have the spirit world a little more fleshed out, and they do more stuff with the spirit world. But overall, yeah, I don't know. This episode was kind of, it was okay. It wasn't terrible, but I think the weakest part of this episode is just the village. The villagers themselves are so uninteresting. And in every other village we've seen, in Omashu, we had like the Cabbage Man and King Bumi. In the Kyoshi Island, we had the Kyoshi Warriors and Aang's crew. In every village we've seen up to this point, we've had something interesting. And this village doesn't have anything. So I think that's the issue with this episode, or at least one of my main issues with it. But yeah, it wasn't terrible.
Have you seen the Miyazaki movies?
Yes, I've seen a lot of them.
So I think this one's like Princess
Mononoke.
Mononoke. Yeah. I'm pretty sure in that one there's also like a Heibei spirit with an acorn. Do you remember this? I have not seen that movie in so long.
I could be wrong, but I think Avatar: The Last Airbender is kind of, especially season one. I have seen a couple because I remember that, and also. In the season one finale, the spirit that Aang ends up turning into when he's like destroying Zhao's ships and stuff looks almost exactly like one of the spirits in Princess Mononoke. So yeah. I feel like when you look at the animation style of Avatar The Last Airbender, I don't know if any of the creators have explicitly said this, but I do think they're kind of were inspired by the Studio Ghibli movies and the Miyazaki movies in particular. You do get that vibe from a lot of scenes.
Yeah, I think that we do see that here. And I think that's like, you know, nice. Like, I like those movies. I like Avatar. So I don't mind the crossover for sure.
Yeah. It's cool. So do right over here, do we do our episode rankings? Is that what we're going to get into here?
I think we can get into a little episode feedback.
Oh, true. You're
some listener feedback. So as a reminder, you can always write in to avatar@poshowrecaps.com or tweet at us @poshowrecaps. And we'll be... eager to take down your feedback. Here we had a few people write in. At this point, they're becoming regulars. So we have Felipe writing in and saying, why are there no more pandas in the Avatar universe? I do think the Heibei spirit might come back at the end of season one. But yeah, like I feel like we see a lot of bears. We see ostriches. Like we see a bunch of the animals. Why is there this panda erasure?
I don't know. Maybe pandas are a tough animal to animate. I don't know. That's because that's a good point. I don't recall us ever seeing another panda after this. We'll see numerous bears. We'll see platypus bears. And then we'll also see just a straight up normal bear as well. That's not even crossed over with anything. So yeah, that is odd. And I can't really give this a good answer. I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe pandas the creators just hate pandas.
Ooh, that would not jive with me. Pandas are one of my favorite animals. I feel like they're so cool. They just chill and eat bamboo. It's like a pretty nice lifestyle for sure. I feel like they could eat bamboo for 600 days.
With these zoos, they struggle. A lot of zoos that have pandas. Pandas really don't like to reproduce and they're very lazy. So then a lot of the villagers have to like induce, like straight up like force them to reproduce in a way.
Okay.
And they just mope around and just that. So then that's why pandas are also endangered because they're just like too lazy to have kids essentially.
Wow. Okay. I guess, you know.
It's an actual issue in zoos too. I've read a couple of articles about it.
You know, here in the episode, we learned that clouds are made of water. Now I learned that pandas don't like to get it on. This is great. We're learning stuff all the time. Felipe also writes and asks, have you ever had an out-of-body experience like Aang did in this episode? We see the spirit world come up a few more times, so maybe we can touch on that. But yeah, have you ever had an out-of-body experience, Zach?
I've never had an out-of-body experience. And even if I did, I feel like it would be nothing like Aang traversing through the spirit world because he's actually tangible in that world. I've had lucid dreams before, which are always fun. You just in the air flying in your dreams. But no, to answer your question, I don't think I've ever had, or to answer Felipe's question, I've never had an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, this is going to sound a bit odd, but one time I was taking a test and I, like, for some reason I was taking the test. I just circled an answer and I, like, flashed forward in my mind to me looking at the test after it was graded and seeing that that answer was wrong. So I changed it and I ended up getting it right. I don't know how I did this. Like, if I could do this, I could get every single test right forever. But I remember one time where I was like, I just like pictured myself getting the test back and seeing like a red slash line through it. She was like, oh no, can't pick C, got to pick B. And it worked. So maybe you can try that test taking strategy, folks.
Yeah, you get a little like That's So Raven-esque clairvoyance in that instance. I wish I could have that.
It's got to come up more though. You know, one time on a test in high school is not good enough.
But yeah, and then I guess so. That's all for Felipe's feedback. And then, of course, we have Lydia, as always. She sent in a long email. Do you want to get into what Lydia said, her thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, let's get into it. You know, Lydia's always consistent with this feedback. We love that. So she writes, the writers really phoned it in on the animals this episode. Why is the spirit of the forest just a regular panda? Why doesn't it get to be a combo? And then, just like me, she said, I still don't know what the mouse is. Iroh just mumbled the name. So, second question, Zach already took care of you. It's a meadow vole.
I think you guys, know. I'm not trying to poo-poo on YouTube, but I feel like you guys just weren't paying attention. I feel like he does say meadow vole pretty clearly, because I don't even know what a vole is, but I heard it, and then I was like, oh, okay. And I realized that's a rodent. Because, yeah, he says it, like, right off the top of that. He's like, he says meadow vole. Does he not?
Look, I'll go back and listen again. It's casting doubt on all of the takes I've had so far. Like, maybe that game in the first episode has rules now. Like, I'm freaking out a bit. But no, like, I really listened. I really tried to hear what was going on. Didn't get the name at all. But okay, let's forget that. We don't need any more meadow vole talk.
No, it's true. It's all good. But
so yeah, why do we not see this spirit be like a double panda, like a panda and something else, like the ostrich horses we get?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I don't remember a lot of the other spirits. Of course, I remember Ko, the face dealer, who we'll see later. But that's Ko is not really like an animal. He's just an evil spirit. And then I don't remember if the spirits going forward are normal animals or are they always animal hybrids? That's the issue. Because maybe it's the thing where it's like the spirits are the normal animals and then the animals in their real world are the hybrids. I don't know. So, yeah.
Yeah. She has one more thing that she wrote in about the fight. She says, usually I don't weigh in on fights, but gosh, this one was a lot. Everything was so convenient. So I guess her first question is, how long was Zuko waiting for the attack to begin so he could dramatically intervene? Because, like, I think she's right here. You know, Zuko immediately comes in kicking the rock. Like, why doesn't he come in earlier?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. Lydia is correct. This is a very good point. This whole fight, I agree with almost all of Lydia's criticism here. It was very convenient. Mm-hmm. And they basically wiped the floor with these earthbenders. And she brings up another good point. If you're an earthbender and somebody bends a rock back at you, that's what you've been trained for. Like, you're a soldier. You've battled many other earthbenders. So how are you not prepared to have a rock bent back at you? If I was fire bending at you or lightning bending at you, that's one thing. But to get a boulder thrown at you, like, that's the one thing you should be good at defending. So, yeah, I completely agree with all of Lydia's criticisms here.
Yeah, we also had Aaron write in and said, Zuko just kicks the rock like it's nothing when he saves Iroh. He did not skip leg day. And I love that commentary because, yeah, Zuko, you know, he's not as built as Bumi or Commander Zhao, but he does not skip leg day. That is for sure.
Nope, that's 100% facts, no cap. So, and then, yeah, that's basically it for our feedback. Anything else you want to get into, Jake?
Maybe just one more thing. Aaron asks, says he did not remember that the Avatar's animal guides get to be spirits in the world, which is like pretty cool for Appa. But he wonders, do you think Momo also gets spirit world entry? I know that he's not officially Aang's spirit guide, but if you're like close enough, do you think that maybe Momo can sneak in the spirit world once?
I think so, actually. I think so. And I think there is precedent for it. I think if you are a being and you're in tune with your spirit enough, you are able to go into the spirit world. Because, and this is a Legend of Korra spoiler, which we don't really spoil too much, but we see Legend of Korra takes place more than 100 years after what's happening now. And Korra, the avatar of that time, goes into the spirit world and actually sees Iroh in the spirit world just hanging out with some spirit world rabbits. And that's after he's passes on. So if Iroh can get into the spirit world, I think Momo also could.
Yeah, you know, makes sense to me. I feel like Momo should be included, so I'm all on board for that one. Cool. So that's it for our episode feedback. As always, please write in to avatar@postshowrecaps. I love like breaking down these questions. The more absurd, the better, honestly.
You guys, and feel free, the avatar@postshowrecaps.com. Feel free to send in any feedback. We appreciate all of it. Send in cool. anything.
So now let's get to our episode rankings. As a brief reminder, we'll have my score, Zach's score, and the audience score, which will be an average of everyone who's written in. Also, you can write those in at avatar@postshowrecaps.com. And yeah, cool. So we're going to rate things from 0 to 4 cabbages, rating the episodes. And at the end, we'll have our official Aang in there score. Zach, what is your rating for this episode?
This episode, I'm going to give 2.9 out of 4.
Oof. That's not a lot of cabbages, Zach. Why are you so down on this one?
I mean, that's more than half of what we usually of the cabbages there.
Fair.
You're right. It is my lowest score yet. I think it was an okay episode. I thought about going lower, but there was a lot of good in this episode. They set up the spirit world. The Zuko and Iroh story, while they do wipe the floor with the earthbenders, it's kind of cool. It's the first time that we hear Iroh talk about his siege on Ba Sing Se. So I like that. And I liked him breathing fire out of his nose. And I didn't hate this episode, but just the village was so boring. I didn't really care for it. Like, I actually liked seeing Aang venture into the spirit world. And I liked all the stuff with him and the dragon, but everything else, I was just falling asleep. So, yeah, I wasn't really enthralled by some of the parts of the episode. So, yeah, that's why I gave it a 2.9 out of 4. What about yourself?
I think a lot of what you said is accurate. This episode does well. It introduces Ba Sing Se, the spirit world. It shows Uncle Iroh's bending. But, yeah, it really lacks from having any secondary supporting characters that are of any intrigue at all. The only, like, interesting character is, I guess, the Heibai and Roku's dragon. But even those characters are not really enough to support this episode. So I'm going to give this a 3.1. Our listeners are actually higher on this episode than we are. I feel like that's a change.
That's not normal.
They gave us a score, or they gave this episode a score of 3.275. Maybe we can truncate that a bit, but that will leave this week's episode at an average of 3.1.
Yeah, I mean, it was a solid episode, and they do, like I said, they set the stage for next week's episode. This is a two-parter, but it's so weird, because I feel like they're two, like, I watched the second part of this episode, and I feel like they could have just made it, like, this be one episode, and that be its own episode as well, honestly, but...
I do think Avatar has a lot of two-part episodes. I think that's pretty interesting, and it feels abnormal for a cartoon. Like, maybe I'm not super well-versed in the cartoon world, but they do have a lot of these two-parters, and this did air as, like, two different weeks. So I kind of wonder why they made it, like, a two-part episode at all, but...
I don't know, honestly, but yeah,
well,
they did.
That leaves this episode at 3.1, which is just edging out, barely, the Southern Air Temple, which was at a 3.07.
Interesting. Wow. I like the Southern Air Temple more than this episode, honestly. But to each their own. We'll continue with. And so are we going to go to our, what did we call it last week? Quattro Bendiero? Was that the thing?
I think right before we do that one, let's do just a quick battle of the battles on that.
Oh, facts. Yeah, you're right. I forgot about
Earthbender, Firebender skirmish. Here we have the audience pretty low on this battle with a 2.35. Zach, what do you give this battle out of 4?
Out of 4? Did they do it out of 5? Is that what they did? And so they did a 2.3 out of 5, you just said? Or 4?
No, I think it's a... Sorry, 2.35 is the score.
Oh, 2.35. Out of 4, okay, yeah. Got it. Okay. I'll give it like a 2.2. I mean, I like some of the stuff Iroh did, but overall, I don't know. For me, in any form of media, whenever I see a battle, I don't love these one-sided beatings. Any battle I watch, I want it to be back and forth. That's all I care about. So that's why I'm kind of low on this.
I'm going to give this one a 2. I was not a huge fan of this battle. I think there are some legendary battles, and this is not one of them. So yeah, this will have the battle at a 2.18, our lowest battle of season one and all the seasons, because we haven't done the other season. So there we go. Not a, you know, fantastic episode, but some fun stuff in there.
Yeah, so it wasn't a fantastic episode, but I think we had fun talking about it.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, maybe we can get into this, what did we call it last time? Quattro Bandiero?
That's what you called it? I feel like we come up with a better name. We'll workshop. You know what we should just do, honestly? Man, why not just keep it simple? Why not just call this the Fantastic Foursome segment? And each week we just hit up a different Fantastic Foursome in history. And we've already done the Fantastic Four, so I don't know. Like, I don't think there's too much conflicting stuff there, unless you have a better name off the top of your head. Or for the, like, fifth week in a row, we can keep workshopping the name behind the scenes. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, why settle on one name? Let's just keep doing this.
Have a different name every week.
Yeah. I see no reason not to, you know, maybe it'll add some intrigue. We'll see what this episode ends up being called. We're going to have to get away from, you know, names that make sense pretty soon. So soon the name, like, people will listen to the segment and they'll just be like, what? Like, I don't follow it. So anyway, we can call it the Fantastic Foursome for this week. You know, who knows? Sure. Maybe next week we'll feel different.
Yeah, so the quartet we're going over this week is the Core Four from The Wizard of Oz. Now, I guess, well, you know, should we start with Dorothy? Should she be our first?
Yeah, Dorothy. Is that? I'm pretty sure that's how they say it in the in the movie. So yeah, Dorothy I have here as my airbender. I think that this one makes sense. You know, not only is she in some sort of big tornado to get transported to Oz, she's also like pretty spontaneous. She decides to go down the yellow brick road with like pretty much like, you know, very little direction, a bunch of munchkins and a witch told her to. She seems to have that like risk taking and is pretty enthusiastic along the way. I think that's what makes her an airbender to me. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, she's the youngest of the group. She's very adventurous. She's excited to be on this adventure. And yeah, I agree with all of what you said. And I think, yeah, she definitely is the airbender of this group. And yeah, the tornado thing you told me the pre-show, that was pretty funny. Because I was like, huh, I didn't even think that's like one of the things that made her an airbender. I was like, that makes sense.
Hey, you know, why not take all of these random things and add them in? For the firebender, I have the Scarecrow, the first person that Dorothy meets on her journey. I think that, you know, there's not really a clear cut firebender in this one, but I think that, you know, he becomes like an academic almost. And I feel like at the end of the series, he's, you know, kind of willing to go his own route. He's like a little silly, I guess. He's not like your typical, evil earth or firebender. Sorry. But I do think he is the firebender. Also the person that plays him in the movie, Ray Bolger, seems like a firebender himself. He was originally cast as the Tin Woodsman, but he didn't like that role. He wanted to play the Scarecrow, so he asked the actor to switch with him, and I guess the actor didn't mind the swap, and they just switched roles. And that kind of seems like the firebender passion to play the one role, like, who cares what the convention is? I'm just going to switch. So, yeah, what do you think about that, Zach?
Yeah, I think the Cowardly Lion and the Tin Man kind of do fit the other two types so well. So it's almost like the Scarecrow kind of just falls into the firebending slot. And I had no idea of this Ray Bolger stuff. And then when you told me that at the pre-show, I was like, yeah, he does seem more like a firebender than his actual character does.
Yeah.
Cause I was reading a lot about the Scarecrow. They call him the wisest man in all of Oz. So he's extremely intelligent, but intelligence doesn't necessarily make you a firebender. But yeah, I think you could slot him in here. Why not? He could just be the firebender.
Also, in the same spirit that Dorothy was swept up by a tornado, the Scarecrow does catch on fire. So, hey, more random connections.
In the 2003 musical called Wicked, that is based on The Wizard of Oz, the Scarecrow's name is Fiero Tigalar.
Yep.
Fiero, fire. It's kind of close.
I love
it. You could argue he's a firebender based on just that.
Sure. Have you ever seen Wicked?
No, I've not.
I think it's great. I'll, you know, spare everyone of me blasting out some Defying Gravity right now on the podcast, but yeah, it's one of my favorites. Also, when I was like a little kid, I played a Munchkin. I was in the Lollipop Guild in a small production of The Wizard of Oz. So musicals about Wizard of Oz are always been in my life, apparently.
Wow. And they continue to be a part of your life in this Avatar podcast, an hour and 20 minutes deep. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Keeps coming up no matter what I do. Although I guess I did suggest this last week, or at least like pass on Felipe's suggestion. So maybe it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point.
Yeah, so I guess our next person here will go with the Tin Man or the Tin Woodman. Yep. I actually didn't even know that was his name, Tin Woodsman.
Yeah, it's a pretty terrible last name. you know, I would not want to be last name Woodman. Yeah, that's not doing it for me. I think I would, you know, ask to switch up the names there. I have the Tin Woodsman as my waterbender. You know, if we're going to keep going on this silly path of the Dorothy tornado and the Scarecrow catching on fire, he is rusted from being in the water too long and he cries a bunch. But I also think, you know, he really wants a heart. He wants to, you know, have his heart back and get his emotions in check. And I feel like that's something that a waterbender has to do is, you know, get to this point where they're able to be even tempered and consistent and, you know, like steady. And I feel like he's not that. Like we find out maybe towards the end that he does have a heart and I feel like he can grow into it. But that's why I have him as a waterbender. What are you thinking here, Zach?
Yeah, initially I had him as an earthbender, and the reason for that, it was just, I was just lazy, and I was like, he's made of tin. Tin is kind of metal, it's an element. His last name's Woodsman, that's also kind of earthy. So I just had him because as an earthbender because of that. But all of what you said is true, and I feel like the average earthbender would not be as passionate as wanting to find a heart as the Tin Man is. I feel like that's more of a waterbending quality, just being extremely passionate and trying to open your heart up. So yeah, I think I agree with you here. And that leaves the Cowardly Lion as our earthbender. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he is the earthbender here. You know, he wants courage the whole time. But I think even despite this, he does act pretty courageously. Maybe it's just to defend people. But, you know, before Dorothy goes into the wonderful world of Oz, the character that will become the Cowardly Lion saves her as she's falling in. I think a few times, you know, he steps up and tries to save people. And I feel like that's something that he that's just part of his character. You know, he's that person who is like the bedrock. I guess it's like a terrible pun. But he is like the supportive person in the group. And I think that's what makes him the earthbender.
Yeah, his qualities kind of remind me of like Haru and their village in the last episode, actually, where he just wants to showcase that he's brave. He doubts himself. He doesn't think he can. But throughout the whole movie, there's so many scenes where he's backing up his friends and saving them and acting bravely in the face of danger. And yet he still doubts the fact that he is brave. And I think because of that, he is our earthbender.
So, one interesting thing about the costume that the Cowardly Lion is in, apparently it was made out of real lion skin and human hair to create the mane, which just sounds miserable to be in. But apparently this sold at an auction recently. Zach, how much would you pay for the Cowardly Lion costume from the 1939 movie?
$0, but I assume it's sold for way more than $1 million.
Okay, well, if you're willing to spend $0, then my guess is you're not going to be you're not going to be competitive with that bid. It sold for $3 million to get a bunch of hair. That's disgusting.
Jesus Christ. And you know, it's funny, it's like it keeps increasing in value because I'm just reading. And it was first sold for $826,000 in 2006. Then its price was set at $1.5 million. And then at an auction, it was even more expensive and now was sold for $3.1 million. That's crazy.
That is insane.
Who the heck is paying this much for an old ass costume made of human hair and lion? Like, I don't know.
I would not.
I feel bad for the lion that got killed to put this costume together.
Hey, I'm totally on board with that one. I would not want this one at all. A $3.1 million price is just absurd. incredible. Just crazy. Cool. So there you go. Just as a brief recap, we have the Scarecrow as our Firebender, the Lion as our Earthbender, Tin Woodman as our Waterbender, and Dorothy Gale as our Airbender.
Yeah, and next week, we didn't really get any great suggestions for the segment, so in the pre-show we were talking, we decided we're going to do the Incredibles next week. That's an easy foursome to put together. Who knows, maybe we'll give Jack-Jack his own bending type as well.
And oh, yeah, Jack-Jack. That's what we'll do. Jack-Jack's the Avatar.
Oh, true. He is the Avatar. You're right. Yeah, master of all the elements and all the superpowers.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, we can do the Incredibles the next week. I think that's a fun one.
Yeah, and that's going to be all for us. Remember, you can find our new and improved feed. It's postshowrecaps.com/ATLA, which links directly to our podcasting feed. You can find us on Spotify, on any podcatching app, and just hang in there on Post Show Recaps. And yeah, where can they find you on Twitter, Jacob?
People can find me on Twitter at JK Redman. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, you guys can find me at ZachMohammed32. And in the upcoming weeks, who knows, we might have a couple of guests on the podcast. Change up the format a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. That's all we have for you. Smash those 5 stars. Just smash them.
Yeah, especially if you're American, because apparently American 5-star ratings mean more. Like, Canadians don't do as much to change the algorithm, sadly, even though I'm Canadian. So that's a sad reality. But yes, smash that 5 stars. Yeah, this podcast is a lot of fun. We really appreciate all the support we get. And yeah, that'll be all from us.
Yeah, thanks so much. See you next time.
Thanks a lot. Bye, guys.